if I'm this one. I'll see you next year.
Is it you're referring to the Uranian column?
Yep.
I think it's. Exactly. That's where I started. Well, I can introduce myself. So this is joint work. Well, there's three people involved, and I'm this one. So that's me introducing myself. So this started. There's a long history of me and John working on the threshold and writing stuff and not writing stuff. But it really started when I gave my course on quantum error correction last year. And I'm glad to see some of the people who took that course are here, because I don't feel I did a very good job in explaining the threshold, or rather improving it. And what I discovered and what John discovered, because he was teaching the threshold at roughly the same time, was that there aren't really any good proofs of the threshold in the literature. So there are a number of groups that discovered the threshold, which is one of the central results of Fermat. For those who don't know, I'll eventually say what it is, but that's not so much later.
For this comment, should I bring this as a component or an insult?
Well, so I'll get to you in a minute. So maybe I could say what there is in the literature, which is there's a fairly detailed proof by Harnoff and Benoit. But their proof only works for codes that correct two errors. And then you concatenate them, which I'll talk about later. And intuitively, you'd expect that it could work for codes that correct just one error and concatenate it. There's also a proof by Kataev, also only works for codes that correct two errors. And both those proofs are not particularly simple. Okay, you can read them, well, I actually haven't gone through the time, but at least the Harnoff-Benoit one, you can eventually understand it, but you have to struggle with it. It's pretty long. And has some subtleties that maybe they don't really bring out in. Then there's a series of papers by Hildefang and Zurich, where they say, well, here we have a threshold that applies for codes that correct one error. But if you actually read these papers, you'll find there's nothing like a proof. The basic idea of the argument is pretty simple, and they give that. And they say kind of the conditions that need to be satisfied, but they don't actually give a proof. Okay. So I talked to Manny, and I talked to Ray, and I haven't talked to Wojciech about this, but I've talked about other things. And in any case, I kind of believe that they do have a proof of this. But it's not something that anyone can look up, because it's not written in. And I kind of suspect that the reason that their proof is not written is because it's not terribly simple. So what would really be nice would be a simple proof. And so that's what I'm going to try to show you today. And the proof I'm going to show you I don't know if you'll think it's simple or not, but I'm pretty sure it's simpler than anything else that's out there. And really, what I'm going to try to show you is almost all the proof. I mean, I'm leaving out a small number of details, but I'm including most of them and kind of all of the subtleties involved in the proof I'm going to at least mention. Okay, so you'll be able to see kind of everything. I don't know how clear it will be. That we'll have to find out.
So your title should be a simpler proof.
Well, the guts of the proof are pretty simple. Okay, so at the end, we can take a vote on whether it's really simple. Okay. So fault tolerance. I'm not going to tell you the basic ideas of fault tolerant protocols. Those who took my class better know it. And the other is all really need to do is use some very basic properties of fault tolerant constructions, which I'm going to tell you in a minute. But basically, I'm going to need some kind of there's a technique called quantum error correction where you can code some quantum state in a larger quantum system. You add extra qubits, and then you have some ability to correct errors that occur in that system. And to actually do computation, we need something called fault tolerance. And the idea there is that it's a set of procedures that we can use on states that are already encoded in a quantum error corrected code. And we have to design those procedures in such a way that we don't lose the quantum error correction capabilities while we do operations on the encoded states. Okay, so for instance, if we want to do a controlled knot on an encoded state, we have to figure out how to do that without decoding the state, doing the controlled knot, and then re-encoding. Because otherwise, then it would be vulnerable to errors while we encode it. So basically, there's four rough kinds of operations we're going to need. One of them is fault tolerant error correction. So this is pretty straightforward. If you have not straightforward how to do it, but the idea is straightforward. You have a state, it's encoded in this quantum error correction code. You have to do error correction. You have to figure out what the errors are and fix them. And you want to do this in a way that doesn't cause more errors than it's fixing. Okay. And of course, we need some kind of fault tolerant encoded gates, controlled knot, Hadamard rotation, things like that. Those are not sufficient, but you can get a universal set of gates that allows you to do any quantum computation. And you can do them on encoded states in such a way that errors don't propagate boundless. So that small number of errors in physical gates only cause a correctable error in the whole system. And then we'll need some type, at the end of the computation, we're going to need some type of fault tolerant measurement. And maybe during the computation as well, it could be useful to have a way of measuring states that are fault tolerant, so that if one of our photodetectors messes up for a single qubit, it will still be able to extract the right answer to the computation. Finally, we're going to need a fault tolerant preparation of an encoded state. Okay, so we want to create an encoded zero state in some way that's resistant against single errors in the encoded circuit. And surprisingly enough, that's actually, in some ways, the subtlest construction. But I'm not going to talk about that. Talk about details of how you do any of these things. Just take it for granted that such things exist. And given that they do exist, I want to show that there's a threshold for fault-tolerant computation. So you can do arbitrarily long quantum computations under the right conditions. OK, so first of all, one constant error, constant problem you face in these proofs is how do you define what the encoded state is? Right? What's the logical state of data that's encoded using some quantum error corrected code? There's no errors, that's pretty obvious, right? Because you encode it in a certain way, so you know what the state is. But if there are errors, if the state is entangled with something else, then it becomes much more subtle. So it turns out that a very nice way to define this is using an ideal decoder. Okay? And the idea here is you can write down a decoding operation that corrects errors and gives you an unencoded state. Okay? Now, actually implementing this thing, you don't know how to do that because you don't have perfect gates. So if you actually tried to build this thing, it would never be ideal. But we can still define it as a conceptual tool. And by applying this ideal decoder to an arbitrary state, we can find out what the encoded state is, at least as a definition. Okay. And the nice thing about this definition is that we can apply this ideal decoder to part of the state and still correctly preserve the entanglement with the rest of the state. And that's, of course, very important, because if we have an arbitrary quantum computation, entanglement is a critical part of it. Well, as far as we know, that's a whole other story. But in particular, in quantum arithmetic codes, if we're only decoding, if we have a big quantum arithmetic code that's encoded in many levels and we decode part of it, the entanglement with the other parts is critical to the functioning of the quantum arithmetic code. And I'm also going to occasionally use this ideal encoder. It doesn't get used nearly as much. But the idea here is it takes an unencoded state and it produces a state that's perfectly encoded using this quantum arithmetic encoder. So it has no errors. Again, it's not something you can implement really, but something you can do conceptually. So conventions here, I'm going to have a lot of figures in this talk, and so I've tried to stick to this convention where I'm using thick black lines, and when you have gates and so on that are circled by a thick black line, that means it's an encoded state, encoded using one level of the code, and the thin black lines are unencoded qubit states. And then occasionally I'll have classical bits, usually at the end, and those are going to be thin green lines. And my gates, my error corrections, and so on, they're boxes and circles and triangles for the decoders and encoders. The color that's filling them is going to say something about the kinds of errors. So if it's yellow, that means that I know that it's working correctly, that there are no errors in that circuit. And if it's white like this, well, there might be an error in it, but there's not too many errors. And if it's red, then that means it's bad. That means that there's a lot of errors in it. Okay, and so therefore it's not doing what it's supposed to. So just reviewing quickly. So here I have this kind of rectangle for the error correction. Well, it's not kind of a rectangle, it is a rectangle. For the error correction, circle for a gate, and I'm not going to really be specific about different kinds of gates. And then the triangle pointing this way for measurement, and triangle pointing that way for preparation. And then decoder and encoder look a lot like measurement. And you can tell that they're ideal because they're full of yellow, right? So that means that they're working perfectly. There is another difference between the decoder and the measurement, right? Which is what's coming out here is a qubit instead of a classical bit. And the encoder, you have to put a qubit in instead of nothing.
Why is two?
Well, actually, that's...
Should be one.
Yeah, it could be one. It depends mostly on the needs of the figure that I'm using, whether there's one line or multiple lines going in. Hopefully it'll be clear as I go along what exactly is going on. But if not, please ask in any given figure. Okay. So let me talk about first the properties of quantum error correction of these fault-tolerant protocols that I'm going to use. So first, let's talk about the properties of the fault-tolerant error correction. And we can draw them graphically. So the first one up here, we have a very good error correction. So that means it has no errors. And this operation, where you take an encoded state and stick it into a very good error correction, is the same as the operation where you put it through the very good error correction, and then you put it through an ideal decoder, and then re-encode it. Okay, this seems kind of stupid. Why would this do anything at all? Well, let's think about this. You put an arbitrary state in here, and it gets decoded by an ideal decoder. That means the errors will be corrected. Okay, and then the encoder will produce a state, an encoded state with no error. So this thing, like this, is basically another way of doing error correction. It's not something you can do physically again, because these are ideal decoders and encoders, but it has that effect. And so you can see that this is an identity, right? Because if the error corrector is working correctly, has no errors in it, then putting another error correction right after is not going to make any difference. But on the other hand, if this were just a good error correction, it had an error in it, had the possibility of an error in it, then this might not hold, because that error would get corrected. Those two operations would be different.
Can you do that
this rectangle? Sorry, which rectangle? This one? If I eliminate that. Yes, I guess that would be true. But I want it this way. This is the way I'll use it. And in fact, property 2 basically says what you just said. Property 2 says if you take a very good error correction, then followed by an ideal decoder, that's the same as just doing an ideal decoder. Right? So using this property and the first property, you could do just what Elham said, eliminate the very good error correction, hereby absorb it into the decoder. Okay? And then property 3, well, we have to say something about good error corrections. And in particular, what we want to say is that they don't propagate errors badly. So that if there's just one error, an error correction step, that it's still basically correcting the state. Okay? So in particular, what I want to say is that if you put a state that has no errors, so it's just been produced by an ideal decoder, and we stick it into a good error correction, and then we take an ideal decoder that corrects errors, well, we get the right state out at the end. So that's the same as doing nothing, this whole series. Okay, so if there's an error here, it gets corrected by this ideal decoder. And you see, if this were a bad error correction, then that wouldn't be true. Because we could have two errors, and the state that we decoded at the end would be different, potentially, than the one that we put in. Okay? Everyone happy with these properties? Okay, let's go on. Talk about properties with fault-tolerant gates. And there's 3 of them. Okay, so the first one, let's start simple. We have a gate that has that's very good, it has no errors. And we follow it by an ideal decoder. Okay? And I want to say that gate is doing basically what it's supposed to. Okay? So it's the same as having an ideal decoder and following it by an ideal gate that acts on the unencoded qubit. See, it has a thin line around it instead of a thick line. Okay? So this type of a statement is actually the main thing we're going to want to prove about fault tolerance. We're going to want to say that the real gate, encoded gate, followed by a decoder is the same as the decoder followed by the real gate. Which means that the gate is acting the right way on unencoded states. On the states that are being given to it. Okay? And again, this type of thing wouldn't be true if it were just a good gate, because, there could be errors coming in here. Right? And those errors could combine with the errors in the gate, and then this thing would work.
So, what is the difference between yellow balls with VG and without VG?
The VG doesn't matter. What matters here really is the thick line versus the thin line. Okay. The thick line says this is an encoded state, and the thin line says this is an unencoded state.
So they are basically different gates.
This one is just a physical gate on a single qubit or a 2-qubit, you know, the control knob, whatever. And this is the encoding of the same gate, the fault tolerant encoding of that gate. So they're implemented differently, but the point of the equality is to say that they represent the same thing. Okay? And then property 5 is basically just the same thing with the encoder. Okay, it says that if we have an encoder, we have an encoded state, and we stick it into a very good gate that has no errors, then we can equally well do the gate first and then encode. Okay, that seems pretty straightforward. And again, it's worth noting that this wouldn't work if this were a good gate, okay? Because this over here, this encoder, produces a perfect state without any errors. A perfect encoded state without any errors. Whereas a good gate here could leave an error. So we have two different things, two different operations. Okay? And then 6 is very similar to property 3 for error correction. You take an encoded state, a state that's just been encoded using an ideal encoder, so it has no errors in it. We stick it into a good gate, has at most one error. And then we decode. Do an ideal decoding. And that's the same as just doing this gate on the unencoded state.
So if you select the key,
if you put B here, that's kind of subtle. I guess for this particular arrangement, you get some other gate here. Okay? So it would be a gate that's different from the one you wanted to implement. And of course, it could involve debuggering. It could be you know, you might be getting a super operator rather than a unitary. It turns out that if you don't have this, and you have a bad thing, and that's even more subtle, but I'll get to that in due course. Okay? Everyone kind of understand these properties? You don't seem completely happy. No? Okay. They're fine. So let's go on. Okay. So more definitions. Our computation is going to consist basically of alternating error correction steps and fault tolerant gate implementations. Okay, so it's going to look like this, a series of EC gate, EC gate, EC gate. And we're going to divide them up into things we call extended rectangles, or X-recs for short. And an X-rec is centered around the gate, and it contains the error corrections before and after. This is the leading error correction, this is the trailing error correction. It's worth noting that these extended rectangles overlap with each other because the error correction between two gates is included both in the preceding extended rectangle and the following. So that causes another little complication. Okay, and at this stage I'm going to say that an extended rectangle is good if there's at most one error somewhere during it. And it's bad if there's two or more errors. Okay? And the motivation for that is right now I'm considering codes that correct one error. And so we expect them to be, if there's one error, we should expect them to be able to correct it. And if it's two errors, we don't really care. And the idea would be that errors are rare enough that two errors don't happen very often. Yes?
What about if there's an error in the encoded data at the left edge?
At the left edge, right. So, so if there's an error coming in here and an error here, well, then they could accumulate to cause something very bad happening here. But with the property that I'll write down in a moment, you'll see that that doesn't matter. Okay? But if there's no error here, then things will get corrected by the time we're here. It's better to wait till the next slide, which hopefully clear up all the issues. But are there any questions about the basic definition?
I just wanted to confirm that the definition of an X-rec being good is that there is no error in a physical gate or a timestamp.
That's right.
And you might allow error into the incoming encoded data.
That's right. So actually this is going to be a standard technique in this proof. We're not going to say anything about errors in the state, because that's very hard to define. And that's what causes a lot of the problems actually in the other proofs, is trying to define them. And all we're going to talk about is errors in the operation. And by adding this definition of ideal decoder everywhere, we can avoid having to talk about errors and mistakes. And that's what makes really this a simple proof. So thanks for bringing that up. That's a good point. Okay, so here's the first big lemma. And it says that good extended rectangles are correct. Okay. So what do I mean by correct? It means basically that the gate is doing what it's supposed to. And so let's look at this gate X-rec. So it consists of an EC step, a gate, and then another EC step. And let's suppose that was followed by an ideal decoder. Then what this lemma says is that we can put this decoder back all the way to before the gate. But it has to be after this X-rec because of what Pranav said. If there's an error coming in here and there's an error at this gate, well, they could accumulate to cause the wrong state here. But the point is that in this lemma, it doesn't matter, because then we do the ideal decoder. And the point is that once the state is here, it goes through the gate correctly. Okay? You might ask, well, then why do we need to include this EC at all? Okay? The problem is that if there's errors here, and errors here, they can accumulate. Okay? But it's a good, remember, it's a good X-rec, and there's an error here, then there can't be any here. And we'll see that in the proof explicitly. So if there were two errors, suppose we define the X-rec just as starting here. Okay? said that good would say there's only one error. Okay, but then there could also be an error in this one, and this one, and this one, an error here and here. Okay, but since we're including the whole thing as an X-ray, if there's an error here in this initial EC, then there can't be one here. Okay, and we'll make use of that very explicitly.
But there is an error in the incoming encoded state. And that's there's one error in this one.
Yeah.
So there might be two errors when you come to the yellow triangle.
Well, the point is the error correction steps are also correcting errors, right? Maybe I shouldn't try to convince you that the next slide is going to have the proof. So if you still have questions after that, then the point is that since it's a good extended rectangle, there can only be one error dispersed throughout here. And so there's no way for the errors to combine in a way that prevents this from being true. And so then this lemma is also true of preparation extended rectangle measurement extended rectangle. The subtlety there is that they don't have the same number of error correction steps. In a preparation rectangle, we start with a preparation, and then we do an error correction. And this lemma then says we can push the ideal decoder back all the way to the beginning, and it's just creating a zero qubit, this preparation. Yeah?
So the ideal decoder is correcting this one error?
The ideal decoder, the code, if the code only corrects one error, then the ideal decoder only corrects one error. That's right. The ideal decoder will always give you some state.
Is the right state only if there was?
Well, what is the right state, right? I'm defining the current state of the system by what the ideal decoder gives. And my criterion for something being correct is that the operation being done is correct, right? So this real gate rectangle is doing this gate, the gate that we wanted it to do, on the decoded state.
So it's not really the one that states, it's
the one that operates. That's right.
Yes, so this equality will also hold us. If you have one error in the incoming encoded state, and let's say one error in the physical gate in the first EC step. So,
yeah.
So the final decoded state, I mean, it's something wrong, but it could still be an equality in this.
It's wrong compared to what you wanted it to be,
yes.
but this statement is still true.
This statement is
true. Okay. And then the measurement extract is maybe a little more confusing as you start with something that has an EC followed by measurement, logical measurement. And you can create an ideal decoder just before the measurement. If this is a good extract, that's what the lemma is saying. And then do a measurement on just a single qubit state. Okay. So the basic idea here in all of these is that you can push the ideal decoders back to after this initial error correction step, but no further. Okay, so I'm only going to prove it for the gate extract. The other two are a little bit simpler, but basically the same. So we're going to start with this basic fact: the extended rectangle is good, so there's only one error. So there's going to be three cases. Okay, and the three cases are kind of the obvious ones. It could be an error here, an error here, or an error here. So let's start with a case where there's an error here, one in the leading error correction step. Okay. So what are we going to do? Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to use this property 2 from the six properties I showed you before, which says that a very good EC followed by a decoder, well, we can absorb the error correction into the decoder. Okay, so let's do that. Okay, and then we're going to use property 4, which says if you have a very good gate followed by an ideal decoder, that's the same as the ideal decoder followed by the ideal gate acting on a single qubit. Okay? And that's it. That's what we wanted to show for the first case. Okay, let's go to the second case. Second case, there's an error in the gate. Okay? And I'm not going to go through the things in as much detail, but basically, we can again push this decoder back for the very good error correction. Then we use another property to insert the decoder and encoder after the very good error correction. Okay? And then we have this combination, Encoder, good gate, it has only one error, decoder. And that, remember, we can replace by an ideal gate on the qubit. Maybe you don't remember, but it's true. It's one of the properties I showed you. Case three. Okay, so the last case, we have an error in this trailing error correction. And again, we're going to use the same kinds of properties. So first, we insert the decoder encoder thing after the error correction step. Next thing is we're going to put this encoder forward through the gate. Okay, so now we have an ideal gate. We have an encoder, good error correction, decoder combination. And another one of our properties said that was equal to the identity. Didn't do anything. Okay? And so again, this gives us what we want. Okay? Questions on this? Okay. So anyway, so this is telling us one of the basic properties. But proving those six identities that I used to show this is pretty straightforward for level one. But it's not so straightforward if you have a much more complicated concatenated code. So what's the deal with that code? But okay, so I'm just going to stick for level one for now. So we have one error correction code, and we're using it to correct small number of errors. So first I want to say that we can use this property, this XREC correct property, to show that a circuit, a whole circuit, does what we want it to do. And so let's assume that this circuit consists only of good extended rectangles. Okay? So if we were to break it up here, that's good. And this thing here, that's good. And this thing here, that's good too. And this thing here is good. Okay, so there might be a lot of errors in this circuit. But they don't happen all at the same time, right? They're spread out. So that any single extended rectangle has at most one error. Okay? And then we can use these correctness properties that I just showed you to show that this circuit is equivalent to an unencoded circuit. And so how do we do that? Well, the first thing we do is we use the measurement extended rectangle, and we introduce an ideal decoder there. Right? That was one of the properties. And the measurement now becomes a measurement, an ideal measurement on an unencoded qubit. And then we can push this decoder back through this gate extended rectangle in the previous one. Okay, so we push it back there, get one gate. We push it back again, get another gate. Okay? And then we use the property for the preparation rectangle here to push this decoder all the way back to the beginning of the circuit, and it vanishes again. Okay? So what we get out of this is an ideal quantum circuit that's equivalent to the encoded circuit that we're trying to do. Okay? And so the upshot of this is that we have a theorem that says that fault tolerance actually is good for something. It corrects errors. So in particular, if there's an error rate p per kind of physical gate or time step, since having any single extended rectangle go bad, that happens with a probability some constant times p squared, which means two errors in a short time period, and the constant being the number of possible places for those two errors. Well, if p is low enough, this thing, ctp squared, is going to be less than the probability tp of having our original computation fail. Right? T is the number of steps in the original computation. Okay? And the point here is that I guess I should be a little more explicit. If one of the extended rectangles goes bad, then the computation might fail. But if they're all good, then by the thing I showed you on the last slide, the calculation does exactly what we wanted it to. It correctly simulates the ideal circuit. Okay? Okay. So now I'm halfway through the talk, and I haven't mentioned concatenation. Well, I mentioned it, but I haven't really said what it is. Most of you know, but for those who don't, The idea is straightforward. So we have this error correcting code that I've been talking about abstractly before now. And I've just shown you that it improves the error rate. Okay? You might say, well, if it improves the error rate once, why not use it again to improve the error rate even further? In fact, that's a very good thing to do. So the idea is we have one qubit, we encode it using n qubits. For the purposes of the picture, n is 3, but that's not actually enough. You need, well, 5 is a minimum. 7 actually happens to work pretty well for fault tolerance. And so you take each of these n qubits and you encode them again using the same error correcting code. So now we have n squared qubits. And before the error rate, encoding it once and using the fault tolerance protocol, we found the error rate went from p to something on the order of p squared. And when p is small enough, that's an improvement. And then encoding it again, well, we can square it again, get something on the order of p to the fourth. And so that's a further improvement. And each time we add another level of concatenation, we're basically squaring the error rate again, up to some constant factor, which are not negligible in this case. The upshot is that if the error rate for physical operation is less than some threshold error rate, p sub t, we can do arbitrarily long computations just by encoding enough levels of concatenation. And actually, the number of levels of concatenation we need is not very much. It's the log of the log of the accuracy we want. So that, and which is good, because the overhead is exponential, the number of levels of concatenation. So the upshot is that the overhead here is polynomial in the logarithm of the length of the computation you want to do. So that's the standard thing about the correction result. That part I'm not going to talk about, really. I'm going to concentrate on just proving that this procedure actually works. And in particular, the complicated part is proving these statements about correctness, that if you have good rectangles with a high level of concatenation, that there's not some weird way that the errors can accumulate from the lower levels to mess up your expectations. So let's see. So what does it mean to talk about extended rectangles in concatenated settings? Well, it means kind of the obvious thing. When we concatenate the code, we're also concatenating extended rectangles. So the fault-tolerant protocol for, say, a gate involved a bunch of physical gates, okay, more than one, generally. In fact, this includes error correction steps. It's really a lot, usually. And so to concatenate that, we take each of those physical gates and replace them by the corresponding fault-tolerant construction, okay, because we're replacing each of the physical qubits by an error correction code. Then we can do that as many times as we need to. And so, let's see. And as before, when we do a fault-bound construction, we're inserting error correction steps in between the gates that were created, the logical gates. By convention, the level one block is what I call it the lowest level. It's closest to the physical qubit, so it only has a level one block is n qubits. And level k, the block contains n to the k qubits. Okay, so the higher the value of k, the bigger and more deeply encoded status. Okay? And an extended rectangle level k consists of a level k error correction step followed by a level k gate followed by another level k error correction step. Okay? Now, of course, if we were to break this down to level k minus 1 gates, well, there'd be a lot of them. Okay? And each of those has a level k minus 1 extended rectangle associated with it. Okay? And in between each of those level k minus 1 gates, you have a level k minus 1 error correction. So if you were to do this for level 5 and write down all the things involved, it would be really huge. But we can talk about it abstractly just in this completely self-similar way. And it becomes relatively simple. Okay? And then we're going to say that an extended rectangle level k is good if one of these level k minus 1 extended rectangles, at most, one of these k minus 1 extended rectangles is bad. Okay? And level 1, the definition is just what we used before, which said it's good if there's only one bad gate. And actually, it's not quite the right definition, but I'll get to later the way you have to modify something. That's actually the most complicated part. So remember, since these extended rectangles have the level k minus 1, extended rectangles have level k minus 1 error corrections inside them. So what happens is the logical computation, you want to encode it in a lot of levels of concatenation because that gives us the most protection against errors. But we'll say, okay, we'll do a level k gate, and we'll follow it by a level k error correction. But let's look more closely at what that involves. The level k error correction says, well, first let's do this gate. Okay, but before we do that, it's a level k minus 1 error correction in that gate. And each of those level k minus 1 error corrections has a bunch of level k minus 2 gates in it, and those have level k minus 3 error corrections, and so on and so forth. Okay, so you get all the way down to the physical gate. So there's lots and lots of physical gates going on all the time. Okay? Okay, so now here's the main meat. We want to show this same X rec core lemma that says that we can put this ideal decoder back, and we want to show it for states that are encoded in the concatenated code. Okay, we've already shown it for level 1. So, in fact, all we need as an assumption is that it holds at level 1, so we won't need any details of what this definition is. Okay? And just we need the same kind of pattern holding it at level k. So let's first consider the case where there's no bad sub k minus 1 rectangles, extended rectangles, okay? Because that makes it simpler to say what's going on. What happens to the bad rectangles is more subtle. But that'll be in the next few slides. So we start with a level k extended rectangle. And I'm going to use this purple for level k minus k plus 1, the thick purple lines. And the thin black line here is again level 0. So we have level k plus 1 error correction, level k plus 1 gate, level k plus 1 error correction, followed by a level k plus 1 decoder. So it takes a level k plus 1 state and gives us physical qubit. And we're going to assume that we've already shown that x rec 4 holds at level k, and proved by induction that it holds at level k plus 1. Level k is going to be brown. Okay, so the very first step is we take this thing and we interpret the level k plus 1 extended rectangle as a series of level k gates. Okay, I've just been saying how we can always do that. And those k gates will, of course, have level k error corrections, and they can be broken up into level k extended rectangles. And of course, we'd have to do something like that to use this inductive, to make this inductive work. Okay, so let's do that. Okay, so let's see. So here's this purple rectangle here, a dotted rectangle, is outlining what was the error correction step. And this purple rectangle here is saying what's the gate. And of course, they overlap because the level k error corrections are included in extended rectangles on both sides. And here, this is the error correction step from the level k plus 1 error correction step. And then at the end, we had a level k plus 1 decoder. Well, we can break that down. It's an ideal decoder, but we can break it down just into level k decoders that take level k states and decode them, followed by level 1 decoder. Okay, we can always do the decoding that way, level by level. Okay? So here's one of those cases where we have multiple lines going into the ideal decoder. The idea here is that these decoders think they're giving us physical qubits, but if we take all of these physical qubits together, we get a quantum error corrected code. We can put those together into this level 1 ideal decoder and get a real physical qubit that's representing some actual data. Okay? So now we're going to use the induction step, we're going to use the level k x rec core property to push these level k decoders back all the way to the beginning of this circuit. Well, as far as we can. So we put them back here, we get ideal gates. Put them back here, we get gates. Put them back here, we get gates. And so these are gates acting on physical qubits. But again, if you take them, you know, all of these lines together, there's really more than two, of course, then you get a fault tolerant construction at level one.
They're yellow,
huh? Well, kind of. I mean, they're yellow because I assume there are no bad subrectangles. They actually could be yellow, yeah. But that's just a simplifying assumption. And really, some of them are yellow and some of them are not.
If we're
doing it in all the detail right now, we're not going to do this later.
So these are physical qubits, right?
These are physical qubits, right?
Okay. And so what will become logical qubits when they enter a decoder, right?
Well, the point is that if you were to take them alone, they would be a physical qubit. But there's a lot of these lines, right? And I've only drawn two because I had limits of space. But if you took all of the lines, you know, in general there would be, say, seven if you're using the seven qubit code. And then together they would form a logical qubit.
Yes.
Okay? But right now we're thinking of them as physical qubits because that's how we know how to use this property, the level k x rec core property.
So essentially, I mean, that thick line at the end is the same as the thin line. It's together.
So this, yeah, I don't know how else to represent it, but this little dotted rectangle here is where I do that reinterpretation of these thin lines as comprising together a level one encoded state. Okay? And the next step we're going to do is we're going to take these level zero unencoded states and reinterpret them again as a level one fault tolerant construction. Okay, and we can do that because of the self-similarity. Because we built the level k plus 1 rectangle from the level k rectangle. In the same way, we built level 1 fault-tolerant gate from the level 0 physical gate. Okay? So we reconstruct into another error correction gate, error correction step. And this, of course, is the same gate as we had before. But now it's only encoded at level 1. And that's represented by the thick black line instead of the thick purple line. Okay? Well, maybe you can guess what the next step is. Now we're going to apply X-Rec core at level 1, because we have level 1 X-Rec, and it's good anyway. And we have a level 1 decoder. So we can push it back as far as we can, which is after this error correction. Okay? And we get a good gate. And this time it really is good. Right. Well, okay. So if I were doing this, so again, for the simplifying assumption, I'm saying that all of these are good. Maybe I could go back to this step. The complication is that I don't know how to push back the ideal decoder through a bad rectangle. Okay? But let's assume I could do that. And what I would get would be just a faulty gate, a gate that did something wrong. Okay? Then it'd be perfectly okay to do this reinterpretation. Okay? But these wouldn't be perfect. They'd still be good. Okay? Because I'm assuming up here that the level k plus 1 x-rec is good. So at most one of those level k x-recs could be bad. And the level k x-recs correspond directly to the physical gates that I just reinterpreted here, okay? So there's one bad gate here, and the rest of them are good. And then when I reinterpret them, that means that I have a good level 1 extended rectangle. And so in that case, given that was an acceptable thing to do, then I really can apply level 1 x rec core to put back this decoder. Okay. Okay. So now we have a problem in that these decoders are a different place than these decoders, so I don't know how to read the binary. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to reverse part of my previous operation. Now I'm kind of combining a couple steps here. I could take this EC step, break it down as a bunch of level 0 gates, a bunch of physical gates, and then use the reverse equality for XREC 4 to put these decoders back forwards through the circuit until they're next to this thing. But I can do that. And then I can reconnect all those things into a level k plus 1 error correction system. Okay? And so now I have this level k error correction step followed by, sorry, this is level k plus 1 error correction. And then we have level k decoders followed by level 1 decoder. And so we can combine these two and get level k plus 1 decoder. And that gives us the final statement that we wanted to show. Yeah?
So it's just, can you go back to the previous version? It's just a suggestion, yeah. It's the problem that people raise on diagrammatics. Maybe would it be right to combine those two thin lines first into a single thick line and have that thick line go
Possibly.
More like
possibly that would be fair. I don't know. There's also limits for what I can draw here. But yes, that's basically the idea. Okay, but everyone understands the basic idea here. We're just pushing these decoders around until we get them in the right place. And the idea is by using the properties we already have, we can prove the property to next our level. Okay. So now let's get to this issue about bad subrecognition. So as I said, we don't have a property that says we can put an ideal decoder back to a bad subrecognition. And in fact, if you think about it carefully, you'll find that you shouldn't be able to. Okay? And the reason for that is, what we'd like to do is we'd like to push it back through and say, well, there's some bad gate here. Okay? But the problem is that the bad gate might depend on errors in this pre-existing state. And if we push the decoder back through, those errors get corrected before the gate gets to act. Basically, the problem is that the gate could be kind of entangled with the environment. Okay? So this is kind of a technical problem, but it's kind of an annoying one. And so the way we decided to deal with this is to say, well, since this is a bad gate anyway, let's just do something even worse and insert a projector. Okay, so we're going to say, suppose we would take this state at this point and throw it away and replace it by some fixed state. Okay? And actually, we wanted to make it a random state, so we just pick some orthonormal basis, divide up the system into projectors pi sub I, they have rank 1, so they each correspond to a single pure state. And we'll take consider the possibilities for each of the i's. Okay? And once we have a particular state coming in here, well, then it is okay to put this decoder back through. The problem is that, of course, that we'll get a gate that depends on I, depends on the state that we put in. Okay? And, of course, if it doesn't depend on I, then we'd be okay. We wouldn't have to have this problem in the first place. But because it does, we can't immediately get rid of this projector. Because it's no longer safe to sum over them and say it's the identity because it's correlated between two places on opposite sides of the decoder. So we're going to have to live with these projectors for a little bit longer. But what we can do is we can move them out of the way. Okay? We can say, well, let's take this circuit, the earlier circuit that we have, and we'll purify it in some unitary operation, and then we'll put this decoder back through. Okay? So this projector then becomes u pi I u inverse. But it's all the way back to the beginning of the circuit, or at least the part of the circuit that we care about. Okay, and then we have this U operation, the same as always. And then we have the decoder, and then we have the bad gate. Okay? Now we have to imagine that we're doing this in the context of this bigger XREC 4 proof from the last slide. Okay? So we're going to do that. We're going to take the decoder, we're going to push it back, everyone puts it forward eventually. And the upshot is that at the end, the bad gate disappears. Because the whole big level k plus 1 rectangle is good, there's only one bad level k subrectangle. Okay? And that means that the level 1 circuits that we were getting are good. And therefore, by level 1 x rect 4, we get an actually good gate at the end. Okay? And that means the I has disappeared. And that's good, because that means that we can now sum over the I. And of course, if the pi I is truly identity, then conjugating by unitary is not going to change that basic property, so they still sum up to the identity. So we can get rid of them. Okay? And we end up proving the thing we wanted to prove. This is obviously fairly schematic, but I hope you understand. So the point of inserting projectors is to solve this problem that the bad gate that gets done could depend on the input state. In particular, depend on the errors in the input state. How did it disappear? The eye, this? Oh, so of course in general it won't disappear. But in the context of the particular proof from the previous slide, it always does. Because there's not too many of them. There's only one of these, using the current definition of that. Okay? And so eventually it'll disappear once we complete the full argument. Okay. So, other questions about this? Okay, so that's one of the problems with bad subrectangles. There may be a better way to deal with that. But there is this basic problem that pushing the ideal decoder back for the bad subrectangle doesn't always give you an operation that depends only on the state, okay? That's what we'd like. Okay, so we'd like to be able to do that with this not depending on the input state, right? Just some general unitary operation. Or not unitary, doesn't have to be unitary. But it could be some super operator, right? But if this is depending on what the input state is here, then it's not a super operator. It's not well defined. Okay? And so to force it to be well defined, you want to restrict it to only a single possible input state. And that's why we have the projector.
So it of course depends on what partition of unity you're taking, right?
Sure.
So can you take any partition?
Yes.
So
they have to be rank one, but other than that.
So the proof that G representative depends on the fact that it is a partition of unity and the projector is rank one.
The fact that you can define GI at all depends on it being rank one. The fact that it disappears depends on the fact that there's not very many of them, that there's only one bad subrectangle. And the fact that they disappear at the end is because it's a partition of unity. Right, that was the very last step. Right. Okay. So this is one problem with bad subrectangles. But there's another one. There's another one, which is that extended rectangles overlap. So actually, the probability of having two bad extended rectangles in a row is higher than the probability of having them independently, if they're in separate places. Right? For instance, it takes two errors to cause this extended rectangle to go bad, and two errors to cause this extended rectangle to go bad. Well, I guess one definition would be if both of the errors were in here, it could cause both of these rectangles to go bad. That actually, particular case is the problem, but it is a problem if there's one here, and one here. It only requires three errors, not two. Okay, so that seems like it could be a problem because it means that errors are more common than we might expect easily. And pairs of errors in particular are more common. So I guess it doesn't in any way invalidate the previous argument, but if we start to calculate the probability of having bad rectangles, we would have to be very careful. But it turns out this isn't such a big issue. And the reason is this, if we follow the details of this argument in the theorem, I guess I call it the dilemma, we'll see that we can modify the definition of bad slightly so that we don't have to worry about it. And the reason is that when we put this this decoder back through this bad seven rectangle, we can push it back through the whole thing, including the original bad error correction step, or the error correction step that could be bad. Okay, so we have some bad data here. We have this error. And then we have this property, supposed to relate it to one of the properties I showed you before, but an ideal decoder, we might as well insert a perfect error correction right before it. Okay? Because the decoder includes error correction, so that's not going to change anything. So let's do that. And now you see, we've reconstructed an extended rectangle. And this extended rectangle, this error correction, does not involve this original bad extended rectangle. So they're like two separate extended rectangles. Okay? And so then this extended rectangle might be bad on its own, but it's only bad if there's two errors in here, in the early part. Okay? So the upshot is that we can treat them like uncorrelated. So let's try to modify the definition of badness to take that into account. So this, as I said, is kind of the ugliest part. And so I like to call it bad in context. I don't know if that name is going to stick. But the idea here is we look at this whole circuit, and we want to say that a rectangle is bad in context in this circuit if it appears to be bad once we get to it, okay, using the procedure I just stated. So we put the ideal decoder back, and look, we say, is this rectangle bad? Is this extended rectangle bad? And if it is, well then we remove it all, okay, and look at what's left over. Okay, and so if the preceding extended rectangle still has two errors, then it's bad. But if now there's only one error, then it's good. Okay? Does that procedure make sense? Okay, so we're doing the thing basically from the last slide. We're working backwards through a circuit. And if we ever come to a rectangle that has two errors in it, then we say this rectangle, this extended rectangle is bad. And then we remove it all. Okay? We've already counted those errors, we don't have to count them again. Okay, so we remove them. And we keep working our way back. And we might encounter a rectangle that's not a full rectangle. Okay, it might be missing its trailing error correction for one of them, if it's a two-qubit gate. And but we only need to look at whether it's the remaining part of that rectangle is bad. So it might be that if we looked at it originally with that trailing error correction, it would have been bad. But without it, it's not. So that means that it may have been bad, but it's not bad in context.
Basically, this procedure replaces the trailing error correction by a very good error correction.
Not always. Only if the error correction, if the rectangle afterwards is bad. Okay. So there's actually another notion of badness, another modification of definition of badness, which is useful if you want to count, get a better value differential. And that's, let's talk about a malignant set of locations, okay? So far I said a rectangle is bad if it has more than one error. But actually, there's some places you can put pairs of errors that will not actually cause the rectangle to fail. So, and in particular, the only property I needed was this level 1 x rec 4 property that I could push the decoder back to just before the gate, just after the first guard crosses. Okay. So I'll say any set of locations that lets me do that, that's okay. That's benign. Any set of locations that doesn't let me do that, that's malignant. And the rectangle is bad only if it has a malignant set of bad locations. And the same thing is true, same definition of malignant is true at higher levels. Yeah, it'll depend on the code, it'll depend on the exact fault tolerant circuitry you use, it'll depend on a lot of things. But once you define all of those, then in principle you can figure out what these sets of locations. Combinatorially, it's a pain in the neck. But in principle, it lets you count and it lets you figure out a better structure. Okay, so then I can conclude by stating the threshold here. And so here's where there's a couple of details that I'm leaving out, but not very big ones. So the threshold theorem basically says that there exists some threshold P sub t, so that if the error rate per gate or time step is less than P sub t, we can do arbitrarily long computations with arbitrary accuracy. And so the basic idea is that, well, the computation is going to succeed if all of the top-level extended rectangles are good. So we're going to encode using some number of levels of concatenation. And we just want to do enough so that the probability that the top level extended rectangles probably is small than a given top level extended rectangle is bad. Okay? And we can make it arbitrarily small by having enough levels of concatenation. So let's see. So probably having level one, if error rate p, sorry, it should be some function f. If we have an error rate p, then the probability of having a limit set location is some function of p. Okay, and that'll depend on exactly how you count the malignant set. But basically, since we know we can create circuits where two errors is necessary to have a malignant set, where no one error will cause it to fail, we know that f of p is going to give us something that's order p squared, maybe plus higher order terms. So in particular, that means that there's some fractal value p sub t, and then we know that f of p is less than p sub t times p over p sub t squared. The p sub t's are just basically just constants, so this is saying that f of p is less than some constant times p squared. Right? And then the same rule applies going from level k to level k plus 1. If the error rate at level k is p sub k, then the probability of having a level k plus 1 extended rectangle be bad is f of p sub k. Right, because it's the same set of malignant locations that would cause the level k plus 1 rectangle to be bad. And so that means by applying this k times, we find that p sub k, maybe k minus 1 times, find that p sub k is less than p sub t times p over p sub t to the 2 to the k. Okay, so here we can see the log again. By choosing the error rate that we want, we can let k be log of that error rate with some constants involved. And we can then get this the error rate at level k to be arbitrary with that. And once that's true, the probability of having all the extended rectangles fail can be made small. Or any of your extended rectangles fail can be made small. Okay? Okay, so just to summarize, I want to say what I think I've accomplished here in giving this proof. So one, here you notice I used the word simpler. So we can still take that vote on whether it's actually simple. So one advantage over the public proofs is that this argument applies to codes that correct one error. Okay. And then the key to doing that was having these overlapping extended rectangles. In the Harnoff and Orr proof, or I think the Kataya proof, they had rectangles that didn't overlap. So they had to worry about, when there's an error in the state, and can it combine with an error in the rectangle to cause things to fail. So the code then had to correct two errors. And this this last thing about the malignant sense of errors allows me the possibility to get a pretty good threshold, to prove a pretty good threshold using this result. Thanks. So maybe now's the time to take opinions on that. So is this a simple proof?